Perfect. Good afternoon. I just wanted to talk briefly about law and order, particularly in relation to attacks on police. National got elected to office partly on dealing with law and order issues. I'm not going to repeat all that we've done, but we've already implemented or are implementing a range of measures. That said, there will always be issues with crime. Over the weekend, we saw three serious assaults on police officers, and quite frankly, that's just unacceptable to me. We are considering what options are available to increase penalties for crimes against police officers. We'll do that in a considered way involving both the justice and police ministers and officials. I want to emphasise that this will take some time, but I don't believe any New Zealander wants to see a repeat of the attacks that took place at the weekend. Just in terms of activity this week, I'll be in caucus and the House tomorrow. On Wednesday I'll be in Wellington. On Thursday I'm on a regional visit to North Canterbury. And on Friday I'm in Auckland for a range of events which we will advise about later in the week. In terms of the House, when the House resumes tomorrow, it's the government's intention to make progress on the Children, Young Persons and Their Families Amendment Bill, the Injury Prevention, Rehabilitation and Compensation Amendment Bill, and the Judicial Matters Bill, and to complete the first reading of the Animal Welfare Amendment Bill. Government notice of motion number 3 to reappoint the Ombudsman is set down for tomorrow. On Wednesday, the 24th of February, it's expected that the new Green List MP, Gareth Hughes, will deliver his maiden statement at approximately 5:45. It's anticipated that Wednesday will be a Members' Day. Cabinet's been reasonably busy working on a range of issues, as you'd appreciate, particularly in relation to the upcoming budget, but I'm not in a position to make any comments about those terribly at this time. Well, I guess that's the matter we need to have a look at. Back in December of last year, when there was an attack on Jeremy Snow, the police minister asked for information about assaults on police officers. Now, she's due to have that information reported back to her on the 28th of February. But what they do show is that there's been a significant increase in attacks on police officers in the last decade. For instance, they've increased from 216 in the 1999-2000 period to 412 in the 2008-2009 period. Firearm offences against police more than doubled in the past decade, from 19 again back in the 2000 period to 41. And it's estimated that of the total 8,400 staff, roughly a quarter of all uniformed staff by number and a much larger proportion of frontline staff will be assaulted in some way during the year. Now, the law currently allows for assault of a police officer to be an aggravating factor in sentencing. In other words, it allows it, it doesn't mandatorily demand that it's taken into consideration. And now the matters that are being considered. That's a matter I might add for the Justice Minister in terms of responsibility for sentencing, but working alongside the Police Minister.
Those stats that you just read out really suggest a deep problem, one that's not going to be fixed by increasing penalties.
Well, I think my own take of them would be they would represent the impact that alcohol and drug abuse is having, and the impact it's having on people losing their sense of rationality when they're conducting crimes against police officers. I mean, whether we would change the law to so that it mandatorily requires the judiciary to take a different stance when it's a police officer, you know, I think it's too early to say on that. I think there are some pros and some cons of that. But I think New Zealanders will reflect on the fact that their last line of defence is the police force of New Zealand. And when we saw the sort of acts we saw on the weekend, I think most New Zealanders were offended by that. They were barbaric acts, and quite frankly, they were disgusting. And if anyone thinks the government's going to sit back while police officers' lips are being bitten off and do nothing about it, then they need to think again.
Is there not already a specific charge for assault?
Yeah, so what the common law says at the moment is that it may be taken into consideration, not it must be taken into consideration. So it is an aggravating, can be used as an aggravating factor in sentencing. And there's quite a lot of common law in this area, quite a number of cases that we've looked at where it has been used, but it doesn't have to be used.
So is that one of the options looking at a specific charge to protecting a police officer?
One of the options would it moves from that it can be an aggravating factor in sentencing to that it has to be taken into consideration.
What about a specific sentence, you know, like if you assault a police officer, this is the starting point for us?
All of those are options, I guess, but in the end, we haven't seen the report that's due to the Police Minister on the 28th, nor have we had extensive conversations with the Justice Ministry because it's just too early days. But we will have those discussions, we'll see where it takes us.
Sorry, just to clarify, from beefing up the aggravation right through to a new offence?
Could do, but it could do, but let's all see how it goes.
Are you concerned about essentially aligning people under different categories of seriousness? So, that, for example, Friday there was a awful murder in Christchurch,
yep.
An elderly woman in her home. I mean, people also think that's disgusting and
yes.
Barbaric. Do we want to have someone...
Well, I think that's a fair point. I mean, in the end, you know, we're all equal and everyone's life is valued the same way. I guess the one difference when it comes to police officers, though, is they are the people that we ask to come and defend us in our moment of need. At 2 o'clock in the morning, when someone is potentially breaking into your home, it's 111 that you're ringing to get some response and some help. I think it also sends quite a strong message that we back our police officers. Now, you know, we need to consider all of those matters, and I wouldn't want to jump to conclusions, but the work's been in train for some time anyway.
What does this say about the fact that, you know, in the recent years we've seen the police given tasers, we've seen them given pepper spray, yet the assaults on them seems to be going up exponentially?
Well, I would argue with you tasers will help, at least in some part. I've always thought that tasers as a non-lethal option are a better option than arming the police. I think that, and I would hope that our police force are more likely to use them. I mean, in the case of a gun, as we saw in Waitara, you know, police officers start second-guessing themselves. And so in my view, tasers are a credible option up against, you know, some pea-crazed individual. And I think what we are seeing in the early work as some reports now come back is that quite a number of people that have a taser pulled on them and the red light located on their body, they are actually ceasing their antisocial behaviour. Again, that's a possibility, but the starting point is let's get the report back on the 28th of February. Let's move that into a conversation with the Justice Ministry officials, and then let's determine from there what the best course of action is. So it's that's why I said in my opening remarks, look, it is a process that will take some time. And we don't really want to jump into this unnecessarily. Unfortunately, the weekend's events have left us with no option but to comment on it, and hopefully we've given you a sense of what we think.
Prime Minister, would you...
They do, and there is case law that we can point to where they have, but they don't always.
Prime Minister, would you consider expanding this to include other officers, such as ambulance officers, who may be injured in the course of their duty? Why just police?
Well, I guess we would need to see evidence that's required. It's not about the value of their contribution, it's just simply that police officers are at the forefront of these assaults, and increasingly so. At this point, I don't have any details which would indicate to me that other professions are likely to suffer the same level of abuse in the case of firefighters or ambulance officers. I'm not saying it doesn't happen from time to time, but I don't think it happens at the level of magnitude that it is with police officers.
Well, this has been falling down on the proposals to make.
Yep.
Unsurprisingly, people don't want to go up in isolation. But even being put in more promise of the last 12 New Zealanders
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, the proof in the pudding is always going to be in the eating, and that comes on May the 20th on Budget Day. That's the time where New Zealanders have an opportunity to reflect on whether the package that the government is proposing puts them in a better position. Now, it's my expectation that the vast bulk of them will be better off, and it's also my expectation that the country will be better off. So this isn't just about lowering personal taxes being financed partly through a potential rise in GST. It's also about the wider economic signals, whether we save more, whether we invest more in the productive sector, whether our workforce faces lower marginal tax rates.
So seeing those kinds of numbers and presumably getting emails from your shopping institution, are you losing
any time? No. If anything, actually, the weekend polls, I think, showed that the country's very open-minded about what's going on. So yes, they've indicated some concerns about whether they'll be better off or not. Some in, certainly in isolation, no great surprise if you ask anyone in isolation whether they want costs to go up, they'll be opposed to that. Just as in isolation, if you ask them whether they want personal taxes to go down, they would overwhelmingly support that. Look, I think if you would see it reflected in the party vote numbers if people had lost faith in us. If anything, the weekend polls show that they are very open-minded to what we're suggesting, but they just do want to see that it's going to deliver a better deal for them.
It's going to be too late, really, isn't it? I mean, by the time May 20th budget, presumably that'll take effect, and people really won't have to say that'll be the first time they see the specific details of the proposal.
Well, like any government, we stand and fall on our policies and what we do in our term in office. And in the end, you elect a government to make decisions and do what they believe is right. We believe in terms of lifting New Zealand's economic performance. This is potentially an important element, just one of a range of things we want to do. And come the election in 2011, we'll have to stand up and be counted for our actions. And that'll be the time when New Zealanders determine whether it's the right thing or not.
It will be unmandated, though, because people won't have had a chance to really give their feedback on a solid proposal. I mean, we've got one half of it, obviously.
Yep.
And, you know, very, very little detail on the other. It's not really the basis for people to make a solid decision.
And that's why I think New Zealanders are open-minded and they'll wait until the budget.
We've got two, Labour undertaking a 2-week plus tour.
No, I'm hoping they'll wheel the bus driver out to point out how big his tax cut's going to be.
What do you make of the fact that they're mounting a campaign against the rise in GST but not committing to reverse any rise in GST if they won the next election?
Well, firstly, they're trying to mislead the public. So they're going out there saying there's going to be a rise in GST, but they're forgetting to tell the public about personal tax cuts that will be coming their way. Secondly, that's a very interesting point, isn't it? I mean, if Phil Goff is going to reverse this decision, if National decides to raise GST, then he'll actually be campaigning in 2011 on raising personal taxes right across the board, reducing superannuation and reducing benefit entitlements. And good luck to him if he wants to do that.
This is argument.
Yeah.
What sort of position does that put him?
Well, it's a hypocritical one, isn't it? I mean, in the end, if he's campaigning so strongly against it, one would assume he's going to reverse it, so maybe he needs to tell us he's going to do that. Sorry?
My
view, actually, without wanting to overanalyse these things, I think the difference between TV1 and TV3 was largely actually in the Greens number. TV1 had the Greens a little bit lower, TV3 had the Greens a bit higher. If you combine the Greens and Labor together, they're actually quite similar within the margin of error. I mean, I think you can get overly excited about, you know, a few points either way, but in principle, if you look at the raft of polls we've had in 2010, they sort of show National's in the low to mid-50s, Labor's in the low 30s. Well, I think the answer to that question is, do we need a more efficient state sector? And the answer is yes. The big gains are not in the Ministry of Women Affairs or the Families Commission and the likes. In the end, they suck up some time and some resource, but compared to health or MSD or other large government departments, they are, you know, a very, very, very small fraction of government's expenditure. So, look, there may be some changes. We're not ruling those out. We'll look at those in due course. And we are working on some of those, but the big work is going in areas like health, where you saw last year Tony Ryle announcing, you know, substantial changes in the way that ministry operates.
So do you find yourself somehow looking at some of these ministries and saying, why are we here?
Look, from time to time. I think there's an awful lot of quangos and quasis and all those different sort of bodies out there, and they suck up some time. And if you want efficiency, we need to look at that. But there's also a lot of other aspects of driving efficiency in the state sector, not the least of it being, I might add, a substantial upgrade in IT, and I think we have to look at that.
What about the Ministry of Pacific Affairs? Its financial review stipulates that a broad public finance act and four separate occasions operations in the last financial year. I mean, would that be something that would cover the government's opinion in making decisions in the government departments?
Well, rather than get into an isolated discussion on, you know, one by one of small ministries, what I'd rather say is, you know, look, the Governor's looking at the overall efficiency of the state sector, and where there are potential mergers, or if there are mergers that make sense, we'll carry those out, but we'll do that on a considered basis. All I can tell you is the really big gains aren't in the ministries you're talking about, they're in those really big areas.
The Creech report on Friday, didn't get a chance to read that, and what do you make of the recommendation that essentially water allocation is taken out of the hands of the regional council and given to a quango, really, or a professional body to manage what is essentially 70% of the country's fresh water?
Yeah, well, firstly, I've read the report, and I would say I think the report's quite damning, but not surprising. That has been the feedback that I've had from quite a number of people in local government and just on the ground in Christchurch. Secondly, you know, the government needs to consider its response to that report, and we're doing that now. You know, it's no secret that we want water to be allocated in a more efficient way, and I've made that clear in my opening statement from Parliament. Whether that would lead us to setting up a completely separate body, as the report recommends, and then leaving, you know, one part of ECAN to set up a separate body is a completely another step. And if we were going to do that, why would we just do that in Christchurch? Certainly at a time when we're considering an EPA and the like. So, look, I wouldn't want to jump to conclusions there, but I do want to see that situation resolved in Christchurch, because I do want to see us irrigating more of Canterbury Plains. Well, I read your column this morning, and there were bits of it where I was naughty.
Which bits?
Oh, well, you would have had to sit next to me on the plane while I was reading it.
Key thing is calculated that to compensate a minimum wage earner with GST rise, you have to cut their bottom tax rate to 6.7%.
Who's calculated that?
This is Key Thing, with public address.
All right, okay.
Okay, is this something you believe you can do?
Well, it's not something I'm going to do. Well, because that can't mathematically be correct. I mean, prices are going to rise by 2.2%, or 2.22%, if you want to be absolutely perfectly correct. About 91% of what's in the economy is subject to GST, depending on if you look at the average calculation of what people spend. And on that basis, you wouldn't actually need to cut that rate to 6.5%, because it's only based on income up to 14,000. And a lot of people earn income above that, even if they're low-income New Zealanders.
Aren't those numbers going to be a bit broad, though? I mean, given that you're looking at average spends, two people on $80,000, for example, might spend totally different. One might have a week and great mortgage, which has no GST and a proportionate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're not always going to be average spend for
what
you earn.
Yeah, they're not perfect. But IRD is going to be modelling for us a whole range of different scenarios, and we will no doubt be subject to intense scrutiny from the media, you know, once the package is announced. So I'm sure you'll try and find, you know, the one person that's worse off, and we'll be doing our best to make sure that we can't deliver that person for you.
Well, we can't find them, or
they won't be one. Well, I prefer the latter than the former. Maybe they'll be lying on a waterbed somewhere at the time if they do, anyway.
Minister, what are your thoughts about supporting an Australian case at the International Court of Justice against Japan and whaling?
Wouldn't want to jump to conclusions that we would do that. I mean, look, New Zealand is opposed to whaling in the Southern Ocean. We've made that quite clear. We've also made clear our preference is to try and find a diplomatic solution. And I think that's actually what Australia wants to do, is find a diplomatic solution. That's why they're holding off from taking a court case before November. So, look, if the diplomatic solution fails and the only option available is a court action, at that time we'll consider whether we'll join Australia, but I wouldn't want to jump to conclusions that we would.
Where exactly is the diplomatic...
Well, I understand it's progressing, but, you know, whether it's perfect and whether it occurs, I don't know, but...
It's difficult to progress when people are doing things to each other in the...
Courts.
Southern Ocean.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of complications with it, and everyone, I think, understands the issues. The only thing I would say is that any court case is likely to take a long time to resolve. If we really want to save some whales, then coming up with a diplomatic solution has got to be a faster way of doing it than a court case.
Thank you.
Is that sort of around the area of Japan being able to whale in areas in which hens are not whaling? And
over a period of time, but phasing out.
Phasing out all whaling or phasing out?
I would have thought so. Considered that matter today, and the minister will be in a position to announce that. I would have thought very soon. I would have thought this week.
Any plans to meet Commodore Bainimarama? A few reports out of Fiji about potential meeting between McCulley and his office and Bainimarama at the Hong Kong Sevens, and as a result of meeting with you, is that?
I have no plans to meet him at this time. Whether the Commodore meets up with Murray McCulley at the Hong Kong Sevens, I don't know. I understand that they're both going to be there, which is a spooky coincidence. But I don't know whether... I certainly don't have any plans to meet him.
Prime Minister, you said, going back to Canterbury and irrigation, you said that you wanted to see more irrigation in Canterbury.
I do.
Aren't you coming over the top of local wishes or the whole point of regional council that they make that decision, not central government?
Well... obviously, the case would need to be proven that it's in the best interest of Canterbury to do that. In other words, that we've balanced the environmental needs against the economic returns. But from a purely economic perspective, all of the evidence that I've seen in my time as Prime Minister and actually any work I saw prior to that supports the case that irrigating the South Island is a good thing to do. I actually personally believe it can also be well balanced against the environmental issues, because anyone that knows the Canterbury region well will tell you that what's happening at the moment is rivers like the Avon are starting to run dry, and that's because of the pressure on the aquifers from people drawing water out of that water table there. So, you know, let's see how it would be structured, but it's not impossible to believe that you could properly store some water, send less of it out to sea, and take some pressures off the aquifers to irrigate more of the Canterbury Plains.
So your argument is for improving water storage rather than more water extraction?
Yeah, absolutely. It would involve water storage. Without that, it's not possible. Well, that's the area that would have to be resolved.
So, rivers like the Hurrumilli, which is subject to protection, would you consider revoking them?
Well, that's not my decision at this point.
But would you support the irrigation?
Well, I support greater irrigation in the South Island. How it's achieved is a matter for others. Thanks very much.